Radio 1.
1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. And 51551 is our text number. Darren Lawler. Darren, good afternoon. Hello, Darren.
Hello, Joe.
This time yesterday, where were you, Darren, with your daughter?
Well, this time yesterday, Joe, we were on our way to Crumlin Children's Hospital across the M50 from Tyrrellstown.
And what was your mode of transport? Because it was an emergency.
Our family car, Joe.
So what had happened prior to this time yesterday?
At 12 o'clock yesterday, Joe, my daughter, Katie Ellen, who's 9, alerted me to the fact that my younger daughter, Lola May, who's 8, was suffering a seizure. Her eyes were open, but there were no pupils, just the white of her eyes.
Oh, God.
And she was shaking.
Yeah.
And there was stuff pouring from her mouth like saliva. And she was making very gurgling sounds. She was unconscious. So I was in the kitchen. I ran in and I picked Lola May up. And exactly what Katie Ellen had described is exactly what I seen. It reminded me, Joe, of it was the classic symptoms of what you see on television as a stroke. The whole right side of the body was gone.
Mm-hmm.
It was her mouth was down, her eye was down on the right hand side, but yeah, her eyes were still open, and she was making a horrible gurgling, kind of heavy breathing sound. So I lifted her out to the hall, and I called for my wife, who was upstairs. My wife is a nurse. And then my daughter just went completely flat in my arms, and I thought she was gone, Joe. I thought we'd lost her. And it was just, I just can't explain the fear and the terror. My wife is a nurse. She came down the stairs, and she looked straight away, and she goes, get an ambulance. And yeah, we were preparing to do CPR. The only benefit that we had, Joe, was that when she was in my arms, when I lay her on the ground, we could see that she was breathing, and we did a breathing check, so we knew that we didn't have to perform CPR at that point, but she was very flat. Her right hand had a kind of a claw-like kind of feature to her, the way she was holding her right hand, and her whole right side of her body was down. It was just an absent event. It was horrifying, absolutely horrifying.
And has Lola May ever had an episode like this before, or approximating to this?
No, Joe, nothing. So she was on the sofa.
So that added to your distress.
She's never been sick, Joe. She's never been sick. And for this to come along, it would have been the equivalent, Joe, if I was in Blanchardstown or Isentown, and if I'd seen a middle-aged person suffering this, straight away would say a stroke or cardiac arrest, just from what you see on television.
Okay, your wife dialed 999.
My wife, yeah, I dialed 999, and Fiona tended to Lola May doing the vital checks.
Mm-hmm.
And when we rang 999, they were very helpful. They guided us through what to do. And I was communicating back and forth to my wife what the people on the other end were saying. And she's a nurse, so she knew. But still, she was following the direction, because when it's your own, Joe, it's a different... You're kind of professional. Standing goes out the window. Everything goes chaos, mm-hmm. if that makes any sense. So she was slowly starting to come around. And when I say come around, it was like the left side of her was coming around, but the right side wasn't.
Okay.
And her speech was very, very slurred. So the ambulance people said, look, we'll get somebody there as quick as we can. So we took them at their word, and we hung up the call, finished the call. And 25 minutes later, still no sign. Fiona said, ring them back again. So we rang them back again, and again, very apologetic, but very casually, no, we don't have anything in the area. And I said, you're only telling me now, and I had to ring you back. And he said, we apologise for that. And I said, okay, I'll bring her myself. So we just bundled everybody into the car. Fiona remained in the back of the car with Lola May.
Mm-hmm.
And Fiona says, we'll drive. Tyrrellstown is not too far from the M50, Joe. So we made our way past Blanchardstown Hospital in case we had to turn in. But Fiona says, keep on heading towards Crumlin, which is the best. And if we need to turn off, then at Newcombe, we can go to a separate hospital there. But she was slowly coming around at this stage, but still, okay. Fiona, being a trained medic, was saying, no, the risk is still high. And off we proceeded across the M50 in panic.
And what's
absolute panic.
Driving along the M50 at the best of times can be dangerous, or you wouldn't want to have a weak stomach sometimes, the amount of traffic. Like, what was the traffic like, and what speed were you going, or how did you manage it?
Well, the traffic was the usual traffic down the M50, and I kept in the speed limit on the M50 because we had a clear way, but we couldn't have gone any faster than what we were. And I'd say we were going about 100, maybe at sometimes 110 kilometres.
Right.
And when we were coming close to Lucan, obviously we stayed near over the left-hand side as much as we could. And then when we passed the Lucan bypass, we said, no, keep on going to Crumlin. We then went out to the outside lane, so we kept on going as fast as we could to get to Crumlin. So we came off the Crumlin exit, like the Nace Road exit, if you want to say. And I knew then from, I used to be a taxi driver years ago, Joe, and I just knew that once we hit that long mile interchange, we'd be in trouble.
Yeah.
And in trouble we were. So no chance, no ambulance, every second counts. And we made her way. So when we got onto the long mile road, then I had to do the unthinkable, which was go into the bus lanes and break the red lights. And that's what I had to do.
Wow.
You know, that's what I had to do.
Were you worried about breaking red lights?
Well, Joe, yes, I am worried about breaking red lights because it just appears to be that the when people are in need of assistance, they don't get it unless they help themselves. When they help themselves, Joe, what happens is then the consequences come. We have a health system, Joe, which is built on the carcass of the HSE. And the HSE has been proven time and time again to not be working. We have amazing people who do work for Cervical Check who are brilliant, like Vicky Phelan. We have Mr. Teep. We have Lorraine. And we have Miss Vic Nahuna, who has passed away. And people have to become celebrities to get the health care that they deserve. In our situation, we were more fortunate than other people. Mm-hmm. We had a nurse in the house. We have a family car. What happens to somebody who doesn't have those resources? Although there was panic in the house, we still had to do what we felt was necessary. And now, Joe, it looks like I'm highlighting something and I have to now become some form of a celebrity, if that makes any sense, to voice to people that it is not acceptable what's happening. We have a Taoiseach who's a doctor running the country, and I'm sure he's a lovely man, I've met him. And we have somebody who has no experience running a health service, you know. We get these...
Well, he's not, in fairness now, he's not running the health service, he's the Minister for Health. The health service is run by the nearly 20,000 people. Well, there's more, if you work it out, you go up to nearly 100,000 people that run the health service. But anyway, Darren...
He's responsible for the health service, Joe, and he's responsible for change. And one thing, Joe...
Okay, well, come back a sec, pull back. I don't mean to be rude, Darren. And I hope Lola May is okay. Let me ask that question first.
Well, Lola May is okay now, Joe. Right. We were there from 1 o'clock until 5, and they didn't need to do any scans. And the help, Joe, and Crumlin was second to none.
Right,
they
right.
are amazing people.
Well, that's
they
good to hear.
Really
so let's, and I'm glad to hear that. Now, let's go back to the ambulance. When you dialed 999, had you any indication? I know you're in a panic. And have you any indication? Were you talking to where the ambulance control was that you were talking to? No.
Well, Joe, I just dialed 999 and they asked me where am I, and it's a Dublin 15, so patched me through. So who do you put me through? I don't know.
Well, the Dublin 15 is within the geographical remit of Dublin Fire Brigade, who run the frontline emergency ambulance service. Did they triage over the phone?
They told us what to do over the phone, Joe, to do the checks. Yeah. The checks, you know, make sure, is she breathing? Are her eyes open? Is she communicating? Things like that. So I answered all their questions. But even though they were very, very good and they guided me through everything, Fiona was doing those checks anyway as you speak.
And as you say, you were lucky in that respect.
Joe, we were very lucky. And Fiona's assistant director of nursing at St. James's Hospital. And when she's on working, she's responsible for the whole hospital. So what she did was what any nurse would have done in that situation. And we were lucky to have a nurse in the house.
Okay, so when, and then, and the initial call to 999, did he or she indicate it'll be 15 minutes, it'll be half an hour, it'll be an hour?
No, they says an ambulance will be on the way, Joe. And that's exactly what happened, is they said the ambulance on the way, and the ambulance didn't come. And Fiona, being an experienced nurse, prompted, ring them again. Where's the ambulance?
And have you any idea, when you were travelling along the M50 in a panic, that's the best way to describe it, and along my road in a panic, have you any idea if the ambulance did arrive at the house?
The answer is no, Joe. But what I did say to the ambulance controller, rang them back, I will bring her myself.
Okay.
And I told them I'd bring her myself.
And what was the reaction to that?
I just went off the phone, Joe. I mean, I was trying to be as courteous as I could. Look, I'll ring them myself. We've no time to waste.
Well, we've contacted the HSE National Ambulance Service and Dublin Fire Brigade for a response, and they're both checking their logs to see who logged the call and whose responsibility it was and what the pressure was at noon yesterday in the Dublin area. But you, just to recap briefly, that conversation, when you rang back 6 down 25 minutes, the call taker said, the first responder said, we're very busy.
No, we have nothing in the area. We've nothing available at the moment. And he apologised. He said, look, we're really, really sorry. And I just says, okay, I had to ring you back to get the answer. I'll take her myself. And that was the end of the call, and off we went. Along the way, Joe, we were watching out for police cars to see if we could see anybody to assist us to get us across as quick as we could.
We didn't know
what was going to face us, you know.
The National Ambulance Service, they have no record of a call out to Tyrrellstown on the 13th of August between 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. So,
no, Joe, that's even worse, Joe.
No, see, we have to understand the systems. I don't know how this... My understanding of the system is that the initial 999 call goes to a central telephone area. Now, I don't know if that's... I know it's changing, but if it's in Tara Street headquarters or is it based out in Tala, and that first response, they determine where the ambulance comes from, and if there's not enough Dublin Fire Brigade ambulances available, which is the ambulances we all see going at speed and with great diligence around the city, they would then call for the National Ambulance Service, which is the ambulances that run by the HSE. They're based in hospitals and various other places. I don't know what there was talk of change the control system about 2 years ago. There's seems to be some discordance, to say the least, between Dublin Fire Brigade, ambulance, well, all the firefighters and paramedics, Dublin Fire Brigade and the National Ambulance Service. So whether that's causing these unacceptable backlogs, we do not know. But somebody needs to knock heads together and sort it out, or else we will have, you say, on the one hand, rightly, Darren, that you had the good luck of your wife. One, that she was at home, by the way, when it happened, that you were at home when it happened. And two, that you had a car. Simple thing people often forget, that not the majority of the population does not have a car, believe it or not. More people walk to the supermarket than drive to the supermarket. That was my statistics recently, I discovered. But anyway, but everyone assumes everyone has a car, and they don't, by a long shot. But anyway,
nothing in Ireland, Joe, nothing in Ireland when we're dealing with the health service is straightforward. The fact we have to look at a cryptic system to find out who's directly responsible for something is absolute madness in today's day and age. And just back to my point, John, I don't be critical of anybody, but just in relation to the Minister for Health...
Dublin Fire Brigade have just told us they did take the call.
Yeah. Just going back to the Minister for Health, Joe. The Minister for Health, I'm sure he's a wonderful man, is responsible for the health service in this country. Every time something goes wrong, we get all these expert reports to say what needs to be done, but we don't get the experts in to finish off what needs to be done. You know, we've inexperienced people running an ever-failing system. I know they're doing their best with what's there, Joe, but what's there is not good enough. We're humans. We need to look after ourselves, you know, and to take it upon ourselves now to put everybody at risk to rush across the M50 to a hospital, which is brilliant for children and brilliant for parents.
Which is completely
unacceptable.
Which is also your point, that the service when you got there was absolutely brilliant.
Joe, it was brilliant. We went in there, there was a queue, we were waiting there. When Lola May had come around in the car, Fiona had carried her in, and we went in and we were waiting 10 minutes to go through the system, getting all your details. And then in another 10 minutes, I think, after that, we were taken in. And they didn't have to do any x-rays, but they did like a scan of the heart, the ECG, and they took blood, so they didn't have to run any CTs. And they said that they had a similar event like this earlier this week. So we allow a child to have one event like that, but a second event, we would take, obviously they took this one serious, but it would be of concern, you know? And it was great to hear that. But, Joe, there's many people who don't have the luxury of a car or have the luxury of experience.
You know? Thankfully, we were there, Joe.
Joe, I have taken up training a long time ago in CPR, and I keep up my training to help other people who are going to be affected by our failing health system. I know we can't be everywhere at once. It's impossible. But I was watching a documentary recently on Hillsborough. If we were to have a disaster like that in Dublin, we wouldn't have the ambulance to cover it. We have the professional people in the hospital. Mm. We don't have the infrastructure or the mechanism to get people to hospital promptly. It's deeply concerning.
Okay. And I don't know how when you look at the traffic in Dublin city centre between the on the canals or between the two canals all day, every day, and way beyond, it's gridlock a lot of the time, including in August, which surprises a lot of people when people presume a lot of people are away, which they are. Okay, Darren Lawler, I'm glad to hear Lola May is well again, and well done to all the family for keeping their cool and putting everything together. Darren, we keep in touch. If we get the response from Dublin Fire Brigade, I will communicate that in the next few minutes. That's Darren Lawler, 51551 joe@rt.ie. And 51551 joe@rt.ie, and of course 1850 715 815.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Back to the initial call from Darren, and again seizures were mentioned. Lisa just mentioned her daughter is up in bed recovering from a seizure, but for Darren it was the first time it ever happened in his family. Jerry, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
You have a question, go ahead. Which I should have asked, by the way.
I'm referring to that caller, Darren. He said that when he put his daughter into the car to bring her to Cumberland Hospital, he passed by Connolly. But there's a new urgent care unit for children has opened in Connolly since the 31st of July.
And does that have an A&E?
It's linked into the main hospital. So if she needed urgent care, they would have got doctors in, you know, to look after. It's linked into the main hospital.
Okay.
And it's an urgent care unit for children. It was built, it started in 2000.
And it is up and running?
Well, it opened on the 31st of July.
Okay.
And the people around that area, if they're having trouble getting ambulances, they should know it's there, you know?
That's a good point. Can you ring them? Can you present there yourself with a child who's unwell? I presume you can, from what you're saying.
Of course you can,
The name is a clue, said you, yeah.
And even not, they have ambulances there, so they would have transferred the child over to hospital to our lady.
Okay. Darren's back. Darren, did that? Come to you at all? As you were, well, you're in a panic.
Well, to hear from my initial thing was, Joe, that when we left Tyrrellstown and we were making our way to the M50, as I said, Fiona says we'll pass by Blanche, and if she gets worse, we'll take her straight in. The information that's just been provided by Jerry is information that I did not know about. And that's going back to my point again, Joe, is that these things are started up and not communicated to people. I did what I felt which was best and necessary at the time, and that's what I did. Now, it's a satellite centre, Joe. It's something
that's
sits at 5 o'clock. You know? It's something that finishes at 5 o'clock.
Yeah, but it was at noon when you called the ambulance, wasn't it?
That's correct, but I didn't know that satellite centre exists until afterwards when I went researching about, because I knew I'd possibly get a phone call today. We didn't know, and you're telling me, Jerry, which is great, and we'll know that in the future, but how many other people like me don't know that?
Well, hopefully they'll all know now.
Yeah, hopefully.
No,
hopefully.
Jerry, that's exactly, and see, that's my point, Jerry. When I mentioned the likes of Vicky Phelan and all the great work by everybody who's affected by the failing health system, it's people like those and people like us and people like you, Jerry, who have to make people aware of what's happening. And what is happening, the government aren't doing it properly.
Okay, they've opened a new urgent care centre. Let's hear from anyone who's unfortunately had to use it, if you understand the way I'm putting that. But is anyone using the new urgent care centre? It's just the first aspect, so to speak, of the new National Children's Hospital that opened on the 31st of July, 14 days ago in Blanchardstown. If anyone has cause to use it, please let us know. Jerry, thanks for that information, by the way. Appreciate it.
And Joe, when they built it, they knocked an opening into the main hospital.
Oh, brilliant, so brilliant, brilliant.
You can actually, so they must have done that for a reason.
Good point, yeah. You haven't had occasion to use it, have you, Jerry?
No, unfortunately, I had to use the main hospital.
Okay, and how are you doing? You okay?
I'm getting along.
Okay. Jerry, mind yourself. Thanks indeed. Okay. 51551. Where's Tim? Tim, Tralee, Killarney, Kenmare, what happened?
Yeah, I suppose I'm going back. I'm the first of all, I'm not going to put down the health service because of the service I've received, from the health service in the last few years has been exceptional. But really, it's just to say that I suppose going back into 2005, 2006, there's been a couple of times where I rushed my daughter to the hospital. And the first time I phoned 999, they told me there wasn't an ambulance in the vicinity. So she'd actually fallen downstairs and right. She became quite lifeless. So what I decided to do is I phoned the local Garda station, asked for a Garda escort. I had to ask for a Garda escort, and to be honest with you, they were absolutely exceptional.
Wow.
The guys in Killarney.
And what did they do for you, Tim?
They gave me a Garda escort.
And what does that mean? Like a bike?
Blue lights.
Car. Okay. And what, they came out to your house or they met you somewhere?
No, we met them. I suppose I met them on the, just so I was going on to the main sort of the new road in Killarney. So I knew where to meet them. They said, meet us there and we'll give you a Garda escort all the way from Killarney to Tralee. And I suppose I'm sure if people needed one, I'm sure they'd be there. But also what I did find handy as well is I had somebody with me at the time in as a passenger in the car, and obviously somebody minding my daughter in the back. And we actually phoned ahead to the hospital to the reception to actually let them know what was coming in. So they were prepared as well.
Great. Okay.
In fairness to the guards, both times they actually phoned me back a couple of days later to see if, tell me how my daughter was and everything.
Well, that's cool,
they both times were acceptable. But really, it was at the time, because the ambulances were so far away, they weren't actually based in Killarney at the time.
Okay, yeah, Tim.
I'm not putting the ambulance service down.
I know you aren't. And your tone betrays that. You're not putting them down. Don't you worry one bit. You're being very even-handed. I hope your daughter is okay.
She's 15. She's sorted now.
Yeah, we've all had something.
But if you need to seek help, I'd rather do it that way than trying to rush to hospital and cause an accident. Okay. You know what I mean?
Thanks, Tim. Let me bring in Cathal Blake. Cathal, what happened in your case?
How are you, Joe? First of all, I'd just like to say that I don't want to detract from Darren's story in any way.
It must
have been a horrible experience. But on the 18th of July, which is a little bit over 3 weeks ago now, my partner, Linda, suffered a similar episode where she started vomiting and went completely unconscious.
Okay.
And I gave CPR while I was dialing 999, and I have to say, within about 7 or 8 minutes, two ambulances actually arrived, and we had four paramedics then working on Linda. And she subsequently, we found out that she was rushed to Our Lady of Lourdes Hospital, and she got a CT scan, and it was a subarachnoid hemorrhage she had, so a brain beating the brain, an aneurysm. So I believe that, but for the prompt actions of the paramedics, Linda mightn't be with us here today. Significant bleed in the brain. So I just felt compelled, as I said, I don't want to take from Darren's experience.
No, it's important to hear these stories. Within 10 minutes, 999, within 10 minutes, two ambulances,
four paramedics were working on her. And we hear so much bad press around the HSE recently. To put out the good story.
Okay, and how is your partner?
Okay, well, Linda was in a coma for 3.5 days, Joe. She was rushed to Bowman that was the Thursday night. The Friday morning, she was brought to Bowman, and they operated on her on the Saturday. They put a platinum coil in, they go up through the groin. It's a new operation to perform.
Yeah.
And she came around on Sunday. She is now back in the Lourdes, and everything is fine, apart from short-term memory is a little bit fuzzy, and sight on her left eye is not great, but motor function, speech and language, she's going to make a full recovery, hopefully.
Isn't that brilliant?
Fantastic. Yeah, it really is, but for the problem with a stroke, like a bleed in the brain,
it's the
speed, and as I said, just listen to Darren's story, brought it back, and my heart goes out to what he had to experience, but I had the complete opposite experience of what he had.
Okay, Cathal, I'm glad to hear your partner's on the road to recovery, full recovery,
no problem,
I hope.
No.
Thanks, Cathal. That's Cathal Blake. You're from Drogheda, obviously, aren't you, with that accent?
Well, in Mornington, County Meath. No, Meath, man, Joe. No, yeah, the right side of the
Boyne. Well, it's a Drogheda accent, is it not?
I'm only 3 miles from Drogheda, but I tell people I'm on the right side of the Boyne, the
Meath side. Okay, Cathal. Kind regards. 51551.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
We also mentioned Comic-Con yesterday, which was the big comic festival, isn't it? I think it's a convention centre. Massive it is. Massive. You pay to participate, of course. You pay to get in. Somebody noticed the Scientology stand at that, which surprised them because it's aimed at teenagers and fun and... We looked at the Comic-Con website and it said, please note that religious, political, adult-oriented organisations, etc. are prohibited from trading at the show, which was on their website after the event. And our producer Lydia Murphy contacted them and we discovered that they put it up on their website literally after the event, from what we can understand. The terms and conditions you have highlighted are a recent update. But anyway, the Scientologists paid their money to Comic-Con, and Comic-Con, I'm sure, got rightly so paid well for the stand, and that's what happened. Okay, let me bring in. We go to back to ambulance story. John Talla, Dublin. Thank you, Dennis Robson. Thank you, Claire O'Mara. Dublin, St Patrick's Day. What happened?
How are you, Joe? Wasn't it St Patrick's Day? It was the day after St Patrick's Day. I was going into town to meet my boy, and just on the Halfpenny Bridge, in the north side of the Halfpenny Bridge, I was standing there waiting for him to turn up, and I noticed this man looked a bit unbalanced. And I watched him, and all of a sudden he nearly fell out in front of the main road there, in front of the traffic. I grabbed a hold of him, steadied him up. There was no smell of alcohol in him. It's just whatever medical condition. I don't know what was wrong with him. So I straightened up, tried to look after him, and he's tried to cross the road again. He's never going to do it. So I set him down on the path.
Okay, fair play.
And I just said to him, I said, listen, I said, what's your name? He told me his name, blah, blah, blah. Asked him, had he got any condition? Not really. Anyway, I said, I'm going to ring the ambulance. Do you mind? He says, no. He said, I think you're right. I rang the ambulance. After 20 minutes, half an hour, no sign. Rang the ambulance back. He said, yeah, we'll be there as soon as we can. Blah, blah, blah. No sign. Anyway, they healed the hunt. After over an hour, still no ambulance. And I'm there with my boy, and I got him to go up to the shop to get him some water. Now, he had went through all the different tests you have to do about what the other gentleman was talking about putting him in certain positions, and is he talking, is he conscious? Anyway, I gave him a little drink of water, grand. After an hour and a half, when there was still no ambulance, I rang the police.
Okay.
I said to the police, can you get some policeman down here? Because I wanted to go after him in bits and pieces, but I don't want to leave this man here on his own. And he said, you should ring the ambulance. I said, I've already did. I told him the story. He said, well, we'll see if we can get some there. Another 15, 20 minutes there, no sign of police. And I'm literally right on the Halfpenny Bridge the day after Paddy's Day. And still no sign of anyone. I rang them back twice after, and on the tour time, I said, I've a good mind to put my foot through the window here at the shop. I said, I know I'm being recorded, but he said, I'll say it, please, man, come down fairly quickly. And I said, he said, well, listen, we're trying to do our best, blah, blah, blah. About 5 minutes after that, it would have been about an hour and three quarters, two policemen came down the street. I grabbed a hold of him, brought them over, and I said to him, I said, listen, this is the condition he's in. His name is so-and-so, he's from here, where the address he's calling from. And I said, this is what I've done to him. And he asked about the ambulance. I said, I'm still waiting on an ambulance.
Okay, well, here's a statement in from Dublin Fire Brigade. The National Ambulance Service will be interested in hearing this. The Eastern Regional Communications Centre is staffed and managed by Dublin Fire Brigade and 99247365. At 12:07 yesterday, we received a request to send an ambulance to a specific location, not disclosed as part of data protection. The patient will describe an 8-year-old female, so that's the young girl we were talking about, an 8-year-old female who was alert, breathing normally with Lola May, with sudden speech problems. The afternoon of the 13th was extremely busy and a sizeable queue had formed and was being managed on a priority basis. In line with current procedure, the ERCC contacted the HSE National Ambulance Service and requested a resource to attend, but the National Ambulance Service were also very busy and had no resource available. couple. And obviously, in the true tradition of Dublin Fire Brigade, they then go on to wish the child well. And they say, delays of this nature, though regretful, are a daily occurrence, which we try to manage to the best of our ability. But the DFB said they contacted the NAS, but the NAS told us earlier that they had no contact, as far as they can find out. Okay, back tomorrow, 1:45, Tara Lockery, Grant Produce, and Brenda Dunne, who is next.